Janae Angola Jr., the podcast.
It is Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, and we got a lot to get to this hour. The highest-selling NFL jersey over the last day shouldn't be something surprising to you if you've been paying attention to the news. Ben Simmons and his future in this league, what we heard from Stephen A. Smith on that front earlier today. But we get our very own Chinee Igbumike back right now from a very uneventful last 24 hours in the WNBA news cycle here, Chinee. I can't possibly think of anything that came up that we talked about on the show briefly while you were gone yesterday or that you discussed on the timeline at length.
This is why I love you, man. I mean, my goodness, it has been a crazy 24 to 48 hours, but I would like to say this. I've tweeted. I brought out the receipts of what receipts need to be brought out, CVS caliber receipts. And you know how we bring good energy everywhere we go. I just had to let the facts be out there for people to digest that. I'm speaking as it comes to my sister, NECA. And of course, we use everything that could be a challenge or a roadblock as motivation, right? So it's a really difficult position to have been put in, but at the same time, it's part of the territory. It's part of the territory when you compete at a high level. So thank you, Junior. Thank you for everyone who has shown us love, who has checked in on us. I'm still here. And if we learned anything this year, it's going to be like, you know, I don't know what it is. I thought like when I turned 29, I started crying more. Like I'd watch movies and scenes. You'd bring on my family and friends here on Chinee Angola Jr. and I'd start crying. And also, we're getting knuck and buck more, all right? Like, we're turning up a little bit more. I'm a little spicier in these streets. So that is what it is, Junior.
Yeah, if anyone missed yesterday, Chinee Igbumike went out there in defense of her sister, NECA Igbumike, again, WNBA MVP, WNBA champion, who is not named as a part of the U.S. Olympic roster for the women's team here. And Chinee, the ultimate measure of greatness, the thing and the reason I always give Paul George grief for giving himself a nickname is when you're truly great, you don't got to say anything because people will always come to bat for what's right. And what I saw yesterday, not just you, her sister, who understandably defended, as you mentioned, with a receipt that looked as much like a Cheesecake Factory menu with all the goods in there, but also I saw plenty of other people on the timeline coming up and saying what everyone was feeling about NECA, and I feel like I know that doesn't help her feel any different about missing out on something that she has rightly earned, but it does always have to be nice to have the respect of so many people as she clearly did yesterday, because that was abundantly clear that her greatness got support from others in the way that true greatness does.
As I did, and as you said, co-sign retweet Mike Golick Jr.
Chinee Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting small businesses with specialized coverages for commercial vehicles. More at progressivecommercial.com. Chinee, we have now four teams left in the NBA playoffs. We know we're getting ready for game two of the Western Conference Finals tonight. And I feel like we talked about briefly the other day when we were in the semifinals that at that time four of the seven coaches left were African-American head coaches. We also know that these coaches have all come from different circumstances. Nate McMillan took over in the middle of the season. Mike Budenholzer's been battling for his job, what feels like, for most of this year. And Ty Lue seems to be now someone that is starting to push out of that shadow of coaches who coach for LeBron James and what they've got to deal with. Chinee, when you look at the rest of this postseason, coaching-wise, who do you think's got the biggest advantage with who's sitting on the sideline right now?
Ooh, that is a fantastic question. You know, I think it's interesting on many different fronts. Who makes the coach's job easier, right? Like, when we brought up, and even Chris Paul not necessarily playing, but his effect on the mentality and mindset and also the confidence of the Phoenix Suns makes you want to give Monty Williams a nod. Ty Lue, given what he has experienced both as a player and a coach of one of the top players, you would think in certain environments there could be a nudge there as well. The Bucks seem like finally like they've exercised all of their demons from the last few years, and now they're playing to their strengths as opposed to people exploiting their weaknesses. So Coach Bud has got that intrinsic value, not necessarily the X's and O's. He's got that. Coach McMillan, like, my gosh, Super Juice Me, Space Jam, the Hawks. So, like, everyone has dealt with their own versions of adversity. I would say, ooh, man, this is a tough one. I would say the team that takes on the mentality of their coach the best, and I would put that under probably Monty Williams and the positive energy and the complete turnaround of the Phoenix Suns.
All right, well, Monty Williams, understandable. Again, he was one a lot of people thought missed out on Coach of the Year down the stretch, losing that one off to Coach Tibbs in New York. Max Kellerman was on the Max Kellerman Show earlier today on ESPN Radio and said for him, there's now not just a new best coach in this postseason left, but the best coach in the NBA left is roaming the sidelines in Los Angeles.
There's Greg Popovich and Eric Spoelstra and some great coaches, but who's the guy that you would want for your franchise? So factor in age, X's and O's, adjustments in playoff series, relating to players, making sure everyone gets along and stays together, developing young players, instilling confidence, like the whole package as a head coach. Who's better than Ty Lue? Or ask yourself, who do you want coaching your team? And that'll give you the answer. Me? Ty Lue.
Janae, looking around this postseason, I'd actually kind of agree with Max. Now, I don't know if I'd say the entire NBA right now because so much of that changes, but when you look at what potentially is accomplished in this postseason, the effect that he's had on a guy like Paul George, who we he's been having to overcome, and just how confident and sure of himself you hear. You talk about that effect. Who makes their players better? As we look around this postseason, as players who have gone major stock up, yes, we can point to Trae Young and what Atlanta's been able to do over the course of this season. Giannis slaying those demons that you mentioned, but I look at the Clippers as a franchise who have struggled for so long to get to this point, and Paul George as a player, and I'm actually inclined to say that Max might be right as we look around at the remaining four coaches here.
Look, I would say that there's the, the telescopic view and the microscopic view, right? And the telescopic view over the course of an entire season that has been difficult has been remarkable for Phoenix. Started the year not so strong, found their stride, got everyone in shape and, like, you know, physically and then also just mentally to compete at a high level. Like, what Monty Williams has done telescopically over the year has been great. Right now in the playoffs, microscopically at the Western Conference Finals, Ty Lue is that guy. Because if you're a star player looking for an answer, you're going to look at the guy who went through the trenches with LeBron James and company and defeated the dynasty and made it through that and say, like, all right, I have this level of respect. And so I see both guys as doing their jobs, but at this point, I can understand why people think that Ty Lue come push and shove with those star players and even one sidelined is getting the most based on what he has endured as a coach and the opportunity that has been presented and how, let's talk about it. You know, what Paul George said when Doc Rivers left was that what Doc Rivers had Paul George doing, I think it was like coming down off of pin downs, was not his natural game. And what Ty Lue said is, like, we're going to take you to your natural game, and then you're going to have to show us that that is why you are a top player. Like, we're putting you in your environment, and, like, now it's on you. And now he's delivered to some degree. So, like, at this point, when push comes to shove in the playoffs, you want that guy that has been battle-tested, and I can understand why Ty Lue is good. Now, I think when we start going big picture, there's other names I will bring up. But here right now, Junior, I can see why that argument is being made.
We can focus on the micro, and that micro takes center stage again tonight. Game 2 of the Suns and Clippers Western Conference Final Series. That's going to start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern here on ESPN Radio and 9 o'clock Eastern on ESPN. But coming up next, Ben Simmons has been the talk of the town since the Eastern Conference letdown for the number one overall seed. Hear what we heard from not only the GM in his front office, but our very own Stephen A. Smith on what the future of Ben Simmons looks like based on the player we've got at present. Next, you're on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae Angolik Jr., the podcast.
Janae Angolik Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golick Jr. and Janae Agumake. And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Because, Chinate, you were off yesterday handling your business, as always, with the WNBA. And so you missed everyone watching the world burn after Ben Simmons and the 76ers lost in Game 7 to the Atlanta Hawks. And so I know we've talked about Ben Simmons a lot, you and I, on this show throughout this playoff run, because he's always been a very polarizing player. Because everything in Philadelphia tends to be polarizing, and when you're a star player that hardly even attempts shots in the fourth quarter of postseason games, we tend to look at you funny. So, Chinay, sitting here now in the offseason, you've heard the comments from Joel Embiid, from Doc Rivers, about trying to have a plan for Ben. So where is Ben Simmons at now, after year five as a player in this league, as you see him?
I think he's in a good place, but not an ideal place. So we saw him make strides in understanding the game and understanding the place he, you know, plays on this team, the Philadelphia 76ers. But you would hope, after a number of years in this league, you're seeing guys like Trae Young, I mean, Donovan Mitchell, young guys go out there and be fearless to fault. You know, Giannis going out there in playoffs in years past and going hard and trying to shoot and airballing threes and airballing free throws and, like, just being vulnerable. And vulnerability is a – did I say that right? Vulnerability is probably the hardest thing to do as a human being, but especially as an athlete with millions of people watching you and trying to criticize and nitpick your mistakes. For Ben Simmons, he needs to be a little bit more vulnerable, not so that he can discover what's on the other side of him pushing himself. To not shoot in fourth quarters of playoff games – doesn't mean that, like, all right, I am cool, you know, I'm going to be a distributor and play to my strengths. Nah, at some point that becomes a liability, and shooting means you're being aggressive, attacking the rim, and impacting the game in a way that people can't stop. And so that's the next step of him mentally saying, I'm willing to make a mistake if it forces my growth. We thought we were going to see that in the playoffs this year. Didn't happen. If it doesn't happen the year after, next year, after this offseason, then things will really be crazy in my head.
Yeah, Chinay, I think an interesting player to bring up when we talk about Ben Simmons would be Russell Westbrook. Because Russell Westbrook's a guy who's dealt with certain limitations to his outside shooting in his game, but the one thing you never question is how hard that guy is going. It might go to a fault where he is going to pound the pavement in some situations where he might need to defer, but again, as we're looking at a star player in this league, all people want, because when Ben Simmons passed up that wide-open dunk and dished that off to Tobias Harris, that looked like a guy who had been broken by these things. Now, we've heard other criticism. Stephen A. Smith on First Take earlier today read a text message that he got about Ben Simmons, one of the stars for Philadelphia. Listen to what he was reading from someone reportedly close to this situation.
I just received a text from somebody very, very close to the situation in Philadelphia about Ben Simmons. This is a quote. This is not me. This is them. Quote, he doesn't work. He doesn't listen. And everyone around him is family. And he's constantly babied.
Yeah, that's the word that's incredible,
out
isn't
about
it?
Ben Simmons.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Chinay Ngolov Jr. here on ESPN Radio. So, Chinay, you hear that. You hear Doc Rivers after the game when asked if Ben Simmons can be the point guard on a championship team saying, I don't know. We heard Embiid seemingly throw him under the bus after the game. So, all of this in mind, if you're a teammate of Ben Simmons this offseason, if you're Doc Rivers and a coach on this team, what message are you trying to send to Ben about where he is with this team?
That he needs to make the decision right now whether or not he wants to be great, whether or not he wants this team to win a championship, because that requires sacrifice. And that sacrifice means pushing yourself to the point of discovering how far, how great, how impactful your game can grow. And if I'm Doc Rivers, a lot of people have been talking about me and my struggles as a coach, and it's almost unfair if people aren't willing to, you know, exhaust all avenues and all options before sort of figuring out whether or not this team is there at their full potential. You saw Joel Embiid year by year get healthier. He's even playing through some things, which is something that is new before they would shut him down. Missing less games, even though there was a big chunk, but year by year it's getting less. an improvement of standing in MVP. You can say check the box off there. You saw Seth Curry as a shooter light it up and step into his own stardom in a way that has validated his game this year. Check box there. Tobias Harris had a career year. Check box there. Like, you're going around the room and seeing, like, all right, everyone's making their strides to do what they need to do. As a coach, you're going to be wondering, you know, yourself, even though he is tenured, like, am I still doing the right things? And I think we do oftentimes give the benefit of the doubt to Doc, rightfully so, based on what he has meant to this league. And now you demand that same standard to your players. And I think that's where we're at with Ben Simmons. I think he's super talented. I love his game. I love how he does a lot of the intangibles. I love his defensive presence. But now it's like, all right, it's time for us to make this leap. We're seeing other people do it. Now let's focus on you. If that means just focusing on me, coach, you, player, and basketball, and working to maximize that, especially this offseason. That's what I'm saying if I'm Coach Rivers.
It's going to be a pivotal offseason for the future of this franchise, because one thing we really need to do is overhaul the image and get away from this talk of the process, right? We know it's going to follow so much of this franchise, but my God, it is just the boogeyman that looms over all of this. It needs to, like you said, you're right, be about the future. It needs to be about the people in the room, not Sam Hinkie, not anything that came before all this. It's what is this core going to accomplish going forward? Because a lot of people still look at that talent and believe there is things that they can be accomplished. But I think, like you said, there's clearly some underlying tension, whether it goes as far as Stephen A. Smith talked about from hearing in that text message or not. There's tension enough that led to certain things to be said in public that are usually only said in private. And so what this team could do, who is, again, the one seed in the Eastern Conference this year, what they can do and rally around this offseason is going to go a long way to see what this team can truly accomplish, if it can reach its full capability or not. At Chenae, at Mike Golic Jr. is where you get us on Twitter. Coming up next, though, we saw big news break yesterday on social media during this show. Carl Nassib, the Las Vegas Raiders defensive end, becomes the first openly gay player active in the NFL. What kind of reverberations does this have, not only around the league, but even further than that? Some of the most telling information from yesterday, next after this word from Indeed.
I got it, Junior, right here. The good news is your business doubled. The even better news is Indeed can help you hire the right people without the wait times of the typical recruiting process. That's because Indeed has a great hiring platform where you can make calls, schedule virtual interviews, and talk to candidates over video right from your easy-to-use employer dashboard. It's just another reason Indeed delivers four times more hires than all of the other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Find your next great hire at Indeed.com/credit. Now, both Junior and I have had some Twitter fingers, and Junior really had a very important gem. Transcendent moment that happened yesterday that will not only help the world of sports through the lens of NFL, but also the world, period. That's next on Chenae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus.
Chenae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got a lot of great ones coming up. You guys, if you're going to watch the NBA tonight or listen to the NBA on ESPN Radio, as you can coming up after us, you can get Mark Jones and Doris Burke on
Who?
The call. Right?
Mark Jones. Chenae,
I'll never forget. You and I have both done this job, gotten to be a part of calling games, all these different facets. I'll never forget one night I was coming home after doing a Thursday night college football game this past season, and I forget if it was at the beginning of the year when we were still dealing with the W and NBA bubbles, or if it was when the basketball seasons had started in December. But I just remember having finished doing color analysis for a football game and listening to Doris on ESPN Radio call a game, I believe, with Mark Jones, and thinking, yeah, her and I aren't doing the same job. Like, how can one person be so much better at the thing with the same title as I was coming off of that? Like, she is an absolute stud. Mark's a great teammate, so we're excited to talk to him.
Goat crew, goat crew. One of them, okay?
Like I say, listen, that crew is goated. So we will talk to Mark Jones in advance of tonight's game against the Suns, against the Clippers, that you can hear on ESPN Radio. We'll also talk to Warren Moon, though, Chenae, in a little bit. Pro Football Hall of Famer. Because of something that we saw take over the news cycle in the NFL yesterday, Carl Nassib became the first openly gay active player in the NFL yesterday with his announcement on his Instagram and social media pages. And Warren Moon tweeted out, "Really proud of Carl Nassib, the first active player to ever do so. I played with several guys who were never comfortable enough to go public. They were great teammates and obviously very talented, and as long as they helped us win and were great teammates, their sexual preference was never an issue. We live in a different time now where diversity is much more accepted. Cheers to Carl, and I hope this lets other athletes know it's okay to say you are who you are." And Chinee, I'm very curious to talk to Warren about his perspective, but I'm also curious for yours, because like many things in life, especially when it comes to acceptance and being open to things, the WNBA has kind of led the way in that, whether it has been for players speaking out off the court, the what players have gone through having to play overseas, the quick turnarounds, or in this instance, celebrating the sexuality of the players in their league much more openly. So what's been your experience in a league that really has led the way in a lot of ways in this?
First, seeing his announcement, also putting out there that he hopes these things don't happen like as often in the future, because it becomes more normalized that this is just how I live and experience. Like, I thought that was great, but I was so happy for him, even highlighting like how long it took for him to feel comfortable to even say this. Imagine that time period of feeling not able to fully be yourself. And I think, even though I am a straight woman, I know this is like not sharing time, but like, I'm a straight woman, I feel that people should be able to be themselves no matter what environment that they're in. And this bends towards the future of what aspirationally would lead that direction for not only NFL, but like also men overall, you know, and just men in spaces where masculinity is celebrated. Like, you know, to me, I was just happy for him. I was happy for the NFL and a lot of the players to support him. And then given my experience in the WNBA, you know, we just now are at a point, especially as a league that's predominantly full of black women, Junior, where we can feel like we can be ourselves and have a group that will have our back through it all. You know, we realize that in finding our voice and educating people to our path. And so to see this happen for someone else in a different arena, it just was a breath of fresh air, knowing that this is not just going to help him and the future of sports, but also just kids and the next generation. It's literally going to save lives. And so it was a beautiful thing to witness.
And I think drawing that comparison to what you talked about, what we saw in the last year, the black women of the WNBA who led so many of these important conversations, players in general, college and pro, that we saw in that avenue finally comfortable enough to speak their truth on issues where in the past it had been difficult. Like I always said in college, I was so shocked to hear so many players, certainly young black players, feeling comfortable enough to speak out on a lot of these issues, because college wasn't a place where we gave those athletes that kind of latitude usually. It's the same in this way, and in maybe just as deep a sense of self when it comes to the sexuality for a lot of these players. Because you're right, I've been in so many locker rooms where it wasn't like it was something that was actively frowned upon, but it was like everybody else who used to use words like gay as some sort of negative term that maybe didn't mean it in a way that was derogatory. But we know when you use the terms in that way, it has a net effect of making it seem like it's something lesser. And if you're around that in a locker room all day, how are you ever going to be comfortable sharing that with the group of guys that you spend more time with than your own family in a lot of these? And so the fact that we've now arrived at a place where people are comfortable enough in the way this is going to be received by their teammates. You saw the outpouring from other NFL players when this happened yesterday. It was incredible, Chinee. And you mentioned lastly the fact that this can help other people, because we do get this thing. Now that our generation, especially like ours, has more of these conversations and is more comfortable with it, you still have to have that reminder that it's not that way for everybody and that this can be a really difficult time for someone looking to make this announcement. And Carl, in his long post on Instagram, pointed out that studies have shown that all it takes is one accepting adult to decrease the risk of an LGBTQ kid attempting suicide by up to 40%. Whether you're a friend, a parent, a coach, or a teammate, you can be that person. And Chinee, having role models like that, having people just in public places that play a sport that you might identify with step up and be that person, that's a powerful statement.
Hugely powerful. And lastly, Junior, I guess what I feel like the tide has shifted, in the sense that even within the last year, we've been challenged personally, professionally, just to make space for others, because we've been in this tunnel vision and a lot of different people have suffered at the hands of that tunnel vision. I feel like we're at the point, and this is where I'd love to get your insight, where in a locker room not too long ago, if someone said something vulnerable, we might not rush to the defense because it's like, oh, that's you. You know what I mean? Versus now we're starting to understand that a lot of the experiences that we might have individually are tied together in different ways. You know, being ostracized or being feeling like you don't belong, like it may be different circumstances, but those feelings are the same. And now we have people in place, or at least educated, to speak up when something wrong is happening, meaning someone is being treated unfairly, whether it is what we experienced this last summer or even just instances that we saw with Carl. I feel like in the locker room, there are advocates, whereas in the past, it may have been a little bit more challenging for us to feel confident in stepping up and assuming that role. Do you think that in the NFL, because in the WNBA, like we've been here, we've been there for a minute, okay? But in the NFL and the world of football, do you think that those advocates are now, as we're seeing flood timelines, a little bit more, you know, prevalent?
Yeah, oh, I absolutely think so. And Shanae, I think it's something you brought up before, like exposure-wise right now, there's very little chance of you making it all the way to the age and time where you'd be in the NFL without meeting somebody who is gay in your life, without it being a family member, a friend, someone that you know and have had that exposure with and had that time to have chats with and understand that there's no difference there. It's just a person. It's something private that they do in a part of their lives that they shouldn't have to answer to publicly. But we know, again, the things that we read to you, we can tell you why it's important. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot more exposure. And I really think the reaction that we saw from Carl's peers around the NFL spoke volumes about that, right? You don't have to walk into a locker room anymore and wonder if there's going to be one person on your side, one person who's going to rock with you if you get some awkward looks. Now it's, man, it seems like the vast majority are, by and large, all right, cool, man, that's who you are. And we want you to be the best version of yourself. Because that's the one thing that's true in every locker room is, I want you doing and being whatever you need to be, the fullest version of yourself, so that we can get the best version of you out in the field and accomplish this common goal that we all have. That's the bottom line for every team, but those relationships run so much deeper. And you all want, I always wanted what was best for my teammates, whether that was leaving and going to a different school, whether that was a different vocation or walk in life, or whether it's a different sexuality and being able to be open about that. I think all those things matter a ton, and I think Carl Nassib is going to go a long way in establishing that. And you know, in the establishing what he has already, Adam Schefter, our ESPN NFL analyst, tweeted out that the Raiders defensive end Carl Nassib was the top-selling NFL jersey across the Fanatics network both yesterday and today. So that support now ringing out through dollars and cents, as well as the support vocally from so many around the league. Coming up next, we will switch gears. We will get back to the league that is still currently playing in the NBA and why it may look a little bit different this time next year, next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Janae Agumake. All guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll talk to Warren Moon, Pro Football Hall of Famer, in about 10 minutes coming up on the show. And, Janae, we might have to ask him if, like, not having the correct taste buds runs in the quarterback room or not, because did you see what our Uncle Dan Orlovsky tweeted out earlier today, Janae?
No, I missed it. What did he say?
Dan Orlovsky went on Twitter, out in public, where people could see this, and said, "Potato chips are gross. Tortilla chips are everything. And if you scoop salsa instead of dipping, you're gross. You scoop queso and guacamole." And Shanae, I just can't understand why he keeps doing this to people.
Potato chips got us through our adolescence. Tortilla chips are like the next step up of adulting. And so it's like, oh, it's got a little bit more texture. You can eat it with a couple different things now that you have with the adult tongue, like hummus and stuff like that, guac. The part I will agree with, Junior, is the dipping. Again, I am someone that does not dunk my French fries. I have the like ketchup packet and I go one by one and then put it in my mouth, right? Like, because I don't want to be overwhelmed with the ketchup and miss the fry. It applies to chips as well. I don't want to be like scooping and be overwhelmed by the guac, while most people probably want to be, like with the avocado and stuff. Like, I don't want to be overwhelmed by that. I want to have the right ratio. So I just like probably dunk it a little bit, you know, and then like try to play with it, and then I get the right amount. I think you are probably built for the opposite, though.
Yeah, me and everyone else who appreciates the goodness of salsa. And you're right, we probably need to take more into account of the fact that you're out here individually striping French fries with ketchup. Do you do the same thing with nuggets? Like, are you averse to nugget dipping? Are you out here hitting them with the ketchup packet too?
I'll dunk nuggets, but I don't like scoop and dunk. I'll drop them in and bring them out. Like, I don't want too much. Some people like really just dunk it and get all the sauce.
From the top, make it drop. These dunky nuggets. Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Boy, I was really trying to figure out a way to say that wasn't going to get us an FCC fine here. So we are moving on as we will figure out how to help Dan Orlovsky later in the show. But Chanae, I don't know if you saw this. The NBA now seriously mulling over some rule changes around fouls that we've seen called throughout this postseason. Trae Young, James Harden, and others have become really well known for hunting fouls, for getting players in the air, jumping into their bodies and creating contact. And between that and some players sticking out legs, doing things to initiate contact to shooters, it seems like the NBA has finally looked at this and says, this isn't cute, so we're going to get rid of it. How big an effect do you think this has, Janae, on guys like Trae Young, on guys like James Harden, who have really made a living in some points working the calls like this?
Not that big of a deal. Like, they just have to adjust to what? Shooting the basketball at the right time instead of leaning in when he sees the offensive player lunging and trying to get a foul call? Like, that's just like, okay, instead of trying to make this a little bit more complicated, let me just shoot it and make the shot. So it's not that big of a deal. And for me, a post player, for me, a stretch four, for me, a defensive player, I'm relieved. I am very relieved. When are we going to show the big players some love? Like, it is a war zone in the paint. You have the ball. Like, we're focused so much on getting those points up because points means more fans, more likely, more people to cheer, more excitement. The numbers of we said this year, you know, statistically is the highest scoring year we've ever seen in the NBA. We also saw some of the best offenses in the NBA in a year where athletes, you know, sort of had to deal with a lot of challenges. Those numbers have gone through the roof. My goodness, can we show some love to the big ones, the tall ones, the large ones, the you know what I mean? Like, finally, this sort of bends us back to not exploiting the offensive rule changes, and now it brings us back to neutral. I would love for the focus to be on, you know, expanding the freedom of movement of the post and allowing us to sort of expand our game as well, besides us just choosing to, man, hell, I'm just going to shoot threes then. Sorry.
Yeah, I do appreciate that the edict sent down to post players was essentially become even freakier athletes, be able to ball handle and shoot from distance to try and overcome all these things we've said in your way. Because I agree with you, Chanae, and just like on a base level, these fouls, I heard Bomani Jones call them insurance fraud, right? Like, it's not legitimate, it's ugly, it slows down what's otherwise a really great game. And so I'm with you. I fully agree that this is something that they could take away and the little guys can be asked to adjust. Like, remember, this is a big positive show here. We just celebrated the stretch mark five winning the MVP this season.
Yes.
Like, we are all about it on this program, so you don't need to yell at me.
Good. I'm not yelling at you. I just was venting a little bit. And you want to know why? Because I think it was one of my teammates that got called for a foul for, like, going under the shooter when the shooter jumped forward. Like, she was there. She stood up, hand straight up, verticality, and the shooter was running, and jumped forward and landed on her. I was like, what? What? Like, she totally was there. So, this is good. I know that people are like, oh, we're doing too much, but I do think that we have gone a little extra with what the refs have to call. And so now we can sort of reward the good shooters out there that are not seeking an additional bonus. Okay, Junior?
No, listen, I agree. This almost seems like the other side of the coin to when we finally started fining dudes for flopping, right? Like, if you really want to take the behavior out of this stuff, there are ways to do it. And we had people selling out flops on the defensive end here, and now we're going to get players that have been doing way too much on the offensive side of things here. So I'm all about this.
Everything not like balance. Balance. That's what we say in Nigeria, okay? Everything not balance.
There we go. Like I say, namaste. That's all we got to get to in this. Namaste, and make sure that we've got some balance in what is definitely an explosive offensive league that just needs to make room for the big bodies out there to go ahead and have some fun and get to some work on here. 888-729-3776. 888-SAY-ESPN is where you can get in touch with us on the Goodyear hotline. But coming up next, we are seeing players across the NFL play for longer than ever before. We're watching Tom Brady talk about the word 50 in his NFL life cycle. So we'll talk to a player that not only has some experience with that, but also talked about the importance of what Carl Nassib did in NFL locker rooms next.
Thanks for listening to Chanae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.